Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader Candy Lewis, along with her co-host, Kitty Bullet Lewis. And welcome to the month of March. We begin our program with a couple of daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living. And the theme for this month is the flow of coming and going. This month's selections were written by Reverend Dr. Margaret Stortz. Your endeavor is rather to become aware of this presence and of its activity flowing through you. Ernest Holmes, this thing called you. Margaret Stortz wrote the Daily Guides annually for 50 years. We are republishing this set to honor Stortz and her contributions over the decades. As spring arrives, bringing new life and all her splendor, I hope these daily guides hold insights for you throughout the month. I entrust them to you with such great love and blessings as possibilities for the wonderful beginnings now unfolding. Each of these guides explores the principles on which the science of mind stands. You'll find them in every day's entry, expanded so they touch every area of our existence and light our paths of discovery. Because these guides explore the ideas of Ernest Holmes, I use his books for every reference. Throughout the month, please enjoy his illuminating words just as you enjoy spring's arrival. Reverend Dr. Margaret Stortz is a longtime minister and practitioner. She's retired from the pulpit of Oakland Center for Spiritual Living in California and has been both chair of the International Board of Trustees and president of the United Church of Religious Science. She has two popular books entitled Essays on Everything and, of course, More Essays on Everything. Both titles can be purchased at Amazon.com. Yes, one by one, without frenzy or impatience, you are going to remove the mental blocks that stand between you and your destiny. This thing called you, page 10. I expect fully and emphatically the answer to my prayer today. Right now, do I possess the thing I so greatly desire? The Science of Mind, page 243. Frequently, I like to open my prayer work with a single word, yes. It is to me an open door to the love and wisdom of the universal presence. Yes, says to God, I am open. I am receptive. I trust the gifts that come to me every day. And it says to the universal law that I give it something positive for its responses. If we understand that the law of mind brings to us inform the nature of what we think about, we will realize the need to be positive, to be affirmative, in other words, to say yes. Biblically, we read, as a man thinketh, so is he. As ye believe, so shall ye receive. These are simply statements that say that our thoughts determine the divine's response to us. Consequently, we need to consider what we are giving the infinite mind to say yes to. Can we, in other words, say yes to ourselves? Are we blessings? Do we know that we are holy, wholesome, right where we are, as we are? Some people have come to believe that they are somehow broken or unworthy, to which message the infinite mind must say yes. It is only wisdom and self-respect to make certain that our thoughts are healthy, friendly, and self-approving. We self-correct as needed, of course, but we accept for ourselves only the best that life has to offer. Affirmation. I am the place where God, Spirit, the universe, stands forth in the world as me. The face I turn to God is receptive and trusting of the presence of God, of Spirit, of the universe. Therefore, I receive good in every way. Science and spirituality. People live in a mind that presses in upon them from all sides with infinite possibilities, with infinite creative power. Creative Mind, page 8. Behind or within the individualized point is the universal, which has no limits. The Science of Mind, page 93. Often science and religion do not see eye to eye much at all, for the religious mysteries do not always fit into the proven theories of science. Spirituality and science, however, often behave as kindred souls, because as science seeks the depth and breadth of the universe, the openness of spirituality walks right along with it. There will always be some mystery in spiritual seeking, since some inner knowing does not always lend itself to reason. But discoverable facts about universal systems need not diminish the wonder of the infinite creative process. If we believe in oneness with God and all life, there should be a deep curiosity in us about how humankind can reveal some of the inner workings of the cosmos and know that we replicate some of these actions within ourselves. In the macrocosm, Doesn't the circling of the planets around the sun mimic the whirling of protons and neutrons around the positively charged nucleus within the microcosmic atoms of our bodies? Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson has said that we are all like little universes. I think that the more science reveals to our awareness about how the universe works, the more we can respect and enjoy the great connections that show up everywhere. The life, vitality, and central fire in the cosmos are at home within us, and there should be never-ending wonder in this discovery process. Affirmation. I am the place where God, Spirit, the universe stands forth in the world as me. I am constantly delighted at the magnificent discoveries I make about my spiritual self. There is always more to experience. And from the Daily Word, published by Unity, positivity. Through positivity, I can do all things through the divine presence within me. I've heard it said, most people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. These words show me the importance of positivity and how an upbeat attitude can keep me afloat upon the rough waters of life. Positivity helps me see the world as full of joy and possibility. Difficulties may arise, but my confident faith in the goodness of God, of Spirit, of the universe, gives me the power to cross the stormy seas, to find calm waters and the warmth of sunshine. The light of God surrounds and folds and uplifts me. When I center my thoughts on the divine within, I feel equipped to meet all challenges. God's indwelling grace sees me through the stormy days. Even if squalls of sadness toss me about, by faith I will outlast the gales and reach calm seas again. Ready. Abundant life is my divine inheritance. With gratitude, I am ready to receive it. It's natural to want to live a satisfying, abundant life. If I find my circumstances don't match my desires, I do not despair or feel resigned to living small. Instead, I turn within to discover any beliefs I've been holding on to that are keeping me from living fully. To live prosperously, I ready myself by claiming abundance as my divine inheritance. In prayer, I envision myself enjoying the blessings and wonders of the world. I affirm, I am ready to live abundantly. I am ready to live the life of my dreams. I use the power of my thoughts and feelings mindfully and with gratitude. My grateful feelings are the gateway to realize ever greater manifestations of abundance. I am grateful to live, grateful to love, grateful to give, and grateful to receive. I am ready for abundant life. And from Mark Nepos, The Book of Awakening, Having a Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, March 1st, live deep enough, and there is only one direction. No matter whom the apprentice talked to, if she listened close enough and long enough, the words all went back to the same source, as if there were only one large thing speaking. No matter how many eyes she looked deeply into, they all eventually revealed the same shimmer, as if there were only one large thing seeing. No matter how many pains she soothed, the cries all sounded from the same human hurt, as if there were only one large thing feeling. When she brought all this to her master walked her in silence through the woods to a clearing where they sat on a fallen tree. The light was flooding through, covering everything. The master placed a stone in her one hand and a small flower in her other hand and said, "Feel the warmth from both stone and flower. See how both are covered differently with the same light. Now trace the light of each back to the sun." The apprentice heard the one large thing speaking in the master's voice, saw the one large thing shimmer in the master's eyes, and even felt the same human hurt in the master's soft silence. The light grew even stronger, and the master said, "We are all just small stones and little flowers searching for our sun. What you have seen under words, behind many eyes, and beneath all cries, is the one direction." Meditate on one recent moment of lightheartedness you have felt. Breathe deeply and smile. Now meditate on one recent moment of lightheartedness you witnessed in a loved one or friend. Breathe deeply and smile. Continue your deep breathing and let these two moments find their sameness. Focus on this lightness of heart as you would a sun out of view, and feel the one direction. We return now to Science of Mind for the personal affirmations for the month by Eugene Holden. The flow of coming and going. Going with the flow. The river knows where it's going. Life, like a river, knows what it's doing. Our work is to relax in flow and trust that we are traveling in grace, experiencing the highest and best. I trust in this divine life. I know I am guided and directed to the highest and best. I go with the flow of this thing called life. Listen. There's something within you that seeks your attention. It is the still, sacred voice of the infinite. That voice, the voice of God, of spirit, of the universe, is found in the stillness of your heart and mind. Take time to listen. I am open, receptive, and available to hear the voice of God, of spirit, of the universe, within me. I follow the guidance, knowing I'm always guided and directed to my greatest good. Easy does it. Life knows how to take care of itself. Therefore, you are also taken care of naturally. It's the flexibility of the bamboo that weathers the storm. A mighty oak might break. Take it easy. Trust the process. I relax in and as the divine presence of love. I let go of the thoughts of stress and strain. I trust in the power of God, of spirit, of the universe, as my life. Bloom where you are planted. No matter where you go, there you are. You may as well bloom right where you are. You are here on purpose, for a purpose. You are here to shine your love, and now is the time to blossom. I am the expression of the presence of God, of spirit, of the universe. Wherever I go, I shine my light. I flow and glow as the presence of the One, and so it is. And we return to the daily word for the monthly affirmations. March, inner peace. I claim divine peace in this now moment. Wisdom. I claim divine wisdom to know the way forward. Health. I claim divine strength, health, and vitality in every moment. Strength. I claim the courage of divine strength. World harmony. I claim divine love to spread harmony throughout the world. And from this same issue, a poem by Barbara A. Perry, God's Voice. God's voice speaks to me all throughout the day, sometimes in the strangest and most delightful way. A song with that special note, maybe a poem someone wrote, listening to a babbling brook, finding an inspiring passage in a book. That special look in my loved one's eyes, the sound of a small child who sometimes cries, a leaf I pick up, the flower that grows, a rainbow, a cloud, the stars as they glow. A picture with colors so vibrant, so bright, the moon as it glows all through the night. In everyone's voice, I hear God again, and when I'm quiet and go deep within, I hear God's voice guiding my way, how to live my life each and every day. We return to Science of Mind for my favorite column. You guessed it, Murphy's Dogma. Pause with perspective. Safe or hidden? Dear humans, I don't shop, buy clothes, search the internet for a good restaurant, make reservations, drive for hours, or pay to park. Everything I eat is fast food. I don't drive to and from work in heavy traffic 5 days a week. I don't pay bills, raise kids, or pay taxes. I don't buy health insurance or weigh myself daily to stay thin. I don't care what happens to the neighborhood or how dirty or old the car I ride in is. I don't care what people say about me when I'm not around. I don't have to create a retirement plan, start a portfolio, or buy stocks. I don't do dishes, have a bedtime, or need a daily bath. I have never argued with the phone, cable, or satellite company. I don't require credit or have a credit rating. Since I'm not busy, it's not hard to find time to be your best friend. I just wanted you to know how grateful I am that I don't have to live a human life. I wish there were a way you could live a dog's life. I think there is an invisible fence around you that is higher than the one you put around me to keep me safe. Funny how fences erected to keep people and dogs safe can also keep the life they were meant to live and enjoy just out of sight and out of reach. Murphy the Human Whisperer watches over his human Reverend Bob Luckin when he isn't working on his column. Send your questions to murphy@csl.org. Regretfully, he cannot reply to all email. And from the same issue, an article by Christy Hardwick, Flowing with Love. Flowing into life as a babe, we appear to be unencumbered. Should we have the good fortune to be without significant physical or mental challenges, we arrive ready to develop into a concrete version of ourselves. First, we flail about, unable to control our limbs, and a mere dozen months later, we walk in an unsteady but competent rhythm. A miracle of a kind. We flow out of life in a similar way, our body systems going offline, if we're fortunate, in a peaceful, gentle release. But what about every moment in between? While the variation in our arrivals, our conditions, our leavings, and our experiences differ for every human on the planet, we all have, however brief, a life. I've been contemplating whether life is for loving wide or loving deep or both or something else altogether. Do we come to do or to be? Presuming one must take precedence over the other, I've landed on the side of coming to be. We do out of necessity, drive, and social conditioning, but we be according to where we put our attention. I've chosen to put my attention on the concept, the experience, and the quality of love. I define love as the energy of the universe, powering every tiny detail. Love powers my breath, my body, the collective body, the solar system, and all the systems known and unknown. This idea of love being eternal, ever-present, and all-powerful makes it the equivalent of what some call God, Spirit, First Cause or Source, what others might call nature or life itself. I call it love. What is mine to do? If love powers the universe, what is mine to do? In asking myself whether it's sufficient to love deeply, I tend to center my focus on individual humans. If we were to love deeply those in our constellation, family, chosen family, friends, is that sufficient enough to be a purpose? And what does loving deeply look like? Responsiveness, compassion, caring, witnessing? Embodying the love languages articulated by Gary Chapman, I would include gifts, acts of service, words of affirmation, quality time, and touch. Are they enough? If I work constantly to be more and more of a great lover of persons, is that in service to the flow of life? Is it enough? And what about loving wide, outside my personal constellation? I can set my sights on the whole of the planet and all living things. I can set my sights on all the four-legged beings, or the plant kingdom, or the creatures of the sea. Is this a better, somehow grander use of love? If I'm able to be love in the face of whatever or whomever comes into my awareness, is this an end to strive for? Is it enough? As a human, I fall short of either deep or wide love every day. I close my heart regularly for protection or out of weariness. Does this mean I'm a failure at life? I don't think so. I can embody love at the level of my capacity, and I can expand that capacity continually. I can practice clearing anything in the way of love. This needs to be a daily practice, using all the tools I have, spiritual, physical, and mental processes, to clear myself of fear, of not being enough, and of any belief in separation. If I do this work, I am in the flow of life. Create room for love. A river runs through a small town in Italy where I live part of the year. The river flows unobstructed, except at one place where a rock dam controls the water speed. If each of the rocks were removed, the river would flow faster, and debris from storms and other inclement weather would erode the river's banks, frequented by fishermen, bicycle riders, and others. Sometimes it makes sense to control the flow of energy. The boundaries of our bodies and our mental states need to be cared for as part of living a balanced life. While the mystic poet Hafiz can be drunk on the beloved all day, not all of us can or want to live that way. I do, however, want to remove obstacles to love's flow in me and trust that the banks of my existence will be safe from erosion so I can flourish. How then do I cooperate with the flow of love as life and let it deepen and widen me? Every day I need to meditate to calm my nervous system and center it on peace rather than anxiety about the world we live in. This is my first step. Once I feel grounded and centered, I can approach my day and the world with an open heart. That is my second step. Whatever flows into my day, I accept and do not resist, even and especially when it's not what I expected or desired. Could that be another definition of loving wide and deep? Total acceptance and surrender to what is? I've learned much by rereading Michael Singer's The Untethered Soul, The Journey Beyond Yourself. I've read it at least three times now, and it serves as a constant reminder to keep my heart open. He has such wise words, reminding us that whenever we notice our hearts are closed, open them. So simple, so beautiful, so hard. One of my daily practices is to open my arms wide and feel the vulnerability of an exposed heart. Breathing into that place within me, I can sense whether there is constriction or something in the way. In yogic traditions, this is a concept called samskara, which refers to the subtle mental impressions caused by every thought, intention, and action an individual has ever experienced. If they become wounds, these experiences are like tiny universes living within our hearts. As life flows, it encounters these tiny universes. If we are open, they can be activated, and we can feel all that we stored with them. Sometimes what we stored is anger, sadness, disappointment, or fear. I often find that I've stored fear in the form of a past hurt. It doesn't really hurt anymore, but the fear of feeling that pain again makes me hide it away and try not to let life activate it. Center yourself and step toward love. Here's the thing, though. If we want to live open-hearted and want to love to the best of our ability, we will be activated or triggered, a word I don't prefer. These activations are for our benefit. We can't know all that we stored unless we let life flow and move it into our experience. It is then that we can, with our maturity and centeredness, allow it to naturally die without our nurturance of it. What if every day we release a little more of what is stored in our hearts and make way for more and more love to flow through us? I imagine we would change our lives, the lives of those we touch, and therefore the world. Think of it as an experiment. Every day, center yourself with whatever practices work for you. These could differ daily. Some days I need to use tapping, an emotional freedom technique. Other days I just need the right music. Still other days I need to jump on my mini trampoline. And sometimes I'm called to nature and I need to put my hand on a tree. There may be days that this centering is all you can do, and this is okay. You've taken a step in the direction of love. Once you feel your center, your secure base in the limitless freedom of spirit, you open. You open your arms wide to remind yourself to open your heart wide. You scan your heart and release anything that seems to obstruct. Sometimes we have sounds or words that come with a release, and sometimes it's just the feeling. I find a big sigh is a good tool. We don't have to know what's being released. We just let it flow out. Imagine the thought, the memory, the hurt, the fear transforming into dust and blowing away from you. Imagine that as dust, it no longer has power or form or impact. And then breathe into the spaciousness. You are spacious inside, and you can feel a buoyancy in your entire body. We are each on the road to recovery, recovering our ability to be open channels for love. When we came into the world through our mothers, we were ushered into an experience and a path that is uniquely our own. We can flow with life, letting ourselves be widened and deepened by it. I love knowing that eventually all water on the planet joins with the oceans and seas. They're separated only by the illusion created by being on Earth. Once we soar up into the sky, we see the tributaries. We see them as the arteries in our own bodies, all leading into and out of the heart, the ocean of limitless love and potential. We are this limitless potential, and we have within us everything we need to love the whole world. The whole world needs you and me, unburdened, wide open, willing to let love flow in, as, and through each of us. Hardwick's new book, To What End? An Inquiry, released in December 2024, offers a more fulsome discussion of what it means to love deep and to love wide. It's available at shopcsl.org and on Amazon. And there was a little sidebar. Samskara. Open your arms wide and feel the vulnerability of an exposed heart. Breathing into that place within, sense whether there is constriction or something in the way. In yogic traditions, this is called samskara, the subtle mental impressions caused by every thought, intention, and action an individual has ever experienced. And from the same issue, Reverend Dr. Petra Weldes' monthly column, Law of Circulation, Building Prosperity Consciousness. We're pretty good at demonstrating in a pinch. We need money for a trip or medical bills. We manifest it. We need a car or some piece of furniture. We manifest it. Usually, the more of a crunch we are in, the quicker and faster we manifest. This is great. However, it leaves us focusing on manifesting specific prosperity when the need arises. There's a much better way to look at this, and that's to build a prosperity consciousness. A prosperity consciousness demonstrates as having enough for all your needs and desires when you need or desire them. It means no longer having to create specific manifestations because you are demonstrating steady and increasing financial freedom and experiencing always having enough. How do you nurture such an empowered prosperity consciousness? You nurture it by tithing. Tithing is the sacred act of demonstrating that you have enough, because every time you tithe 10%, you declare to the universe that you have enough to give 10% away. Wow. Think of it. You write a tithe check of 10% because you have the faith and the conviction that you actually have enough. What happens? That conviction is acted on by the law, and it responds by saying, metaphorically, yes, you are right, you have enough, and it goes busily about creating enough prosperity in your life. To whom should you tithe but to your spiritual community? Because that is where you learned how to nurture an empowered prosperity consciousness. We return to the Daily Word for an article by Tawanda Lawrence, EDD, A Solo Trip and an Unexpected Experience. I love to travel the world and usually go on trips with a travel partner or a group, but I've discovered exploring a new place as a single traveler allows me to focus on my own experience and better feel and rely upon God's guiding presence. Last March, I went on my first international solo trip from the United States to Brazil, and it turned out to be a transformational experience. Day 1, protection. I was waiting in line outside the cruise port in Rio de Janeiro to begin a 4-day cruise that would take me to various landmarks in Brazil. Several months before the trip, my friend and traveling partner told me she wouldn't be joining me due to a scheduling conflict. I had traveled alone within the U.S. before, so I decided to go on the cruise alone. I told my family and friends not to worry and assured them I would be safe. I felt confident before I left for the trip, but the reality of feeling out of place hit me when I arrived at the embarkation point. A woman speaking Portuguese gave me a sticker with the number 23. I entered the port and saw hundreds of people. I walked toward the one sign I could read. It bore the English word check-in, but the man near it was making announcements in Portuguese. I glanced around and realized no one looked or sounded like me. Fear kicked in because I felt lost and overwhelmed. I felt overwhelmingly grateful, understanding how special it was to have the blessing of the experience and for the life and resurrection of Jesus. I could feel my anxiety level rise before I noticed a family standing near me, holding a sticker with the number 20. I approached them and explained I spoke only English. The teenage boy attempted to explain the check-in process to me in English. I felt compassion from his father, mother, and little sister as they smiled and nodded their heads. When the family's number was called, I thanked them and prayed I wouldn't miss the number 23. After approximately 30 minutes, I saw the boy walking in my direction. It turns out he had spoken to the announcer on my behalf and told him I spoke only English and that my number was 23. The man looked me in the eye and nodded his head. I was astonished the boy came back to help me. I shed a few tears thinking about God's protection. I was thousands of miles away from home, but God, Spirit, the universe was with me. I felt God's protecting presence through this boy and his family who were looking out for me. I didn't see them again while I was on the cruise, but I continued to feel blessed by meeting them, even as I understood our paths might not cross again. Day 2, gratitude. On this day of my trip, I was surrounded by images of Jesus as I toured the island of Ilha Bela. I visited the main church, Nossa Senhora da Ajuda e Bom Sucesso, which was built in 1806. Upon exiting, I was captivated by a steel monument of the crucifixion. On the ride to the Agua Branca waterfall, I was in awe to see other steel monuments of Jesus carrying the cross. I thought about how Good Friday was 3 days away and felt grateful to God for this spiritual journey, especially during Holy Week. The tour ended at Coral Beach, one of the most famous beaches in Ilha Bela. Tears came to my eyes as I stood in the ocean with my toes in the sand and watched the waves roll in. I felt overwhelmingly grateful, understanding how special it was to have the blessing of the experience and for the life and resurrection of Jesus. Before I left, I wrote the word grateful in the sand. Day 3, contentment. The excursion I had scheduled in Santos was canceled. In the past, I would have been disappointed, But I've been seeking God's, spirits, the universe's guidance to be content in all circumstances, especially when my plans fall through. I decided to remain on the cruise ship and spend the day at a place that always brings me peace, the spa. Upon entering, I felt an immediate sense of calm. The low light, soothing music, and plush robe and slippers brought me peace. This restorative retreat revitalized me from head to toe. The peace and serenity I found while reading, reflecting, and simply exhaling at my happy place gave me so much joy. I enjoyed each amenity and spent unhurried time in this tranquil oasis. Day 4. Obrigada. On the last day of the cruise, I woke up to a cloudy morning in Rio de Janeiro. I had hoped for better weather, but I was determined to see the Christ the Redeemer statue, the main purpose of my trip. After I disembarked, I muscled through the crowd of passengers and waited about 30 minutes for an Uber. It began to rain on my ride to Tijuca National Park, where the statue is located. Upon arriving, we drove up a steep hill on a winding road for about 10 minutes. At the entrance, I joined a group of tourists and took another 10-minute ride in a sprinter van, traveling upward through the forest. I was in awe of how high we traveled by automobile. The final step was an elevator ride to the second floor, where I laid eyes on the Christ the Redeemer statue, one of the new seven wonders of the world, as the rain poured down. I realized it was Maundy Thursday, the day commemorating the Last Supper. Being in the statue's presence was a perfect culmination of my experience because it is a symbol of peace, protection, compassion, and salvation, all the ways I was transformed on this trip. After seeing the statue, I had only a few hours to get to the airport for my flight home. As I walked through the terminal searching for the security checkpoint, I was surprised to see the boy who had helped me on the first day at the embarkation port. We embraced as though we'd known each other for years. He translated for his mother that she had been looking for me the entire cruise. I shared a text message my mother had sent me. Tell the family I thank God for them and tell them to keep doing good deeds. God has a blessing for them and the young man. I will keep them in my prayers. The last words the boy translated for his mother were, God works in mysterious ways. My tears fell as I gave thanks for this full circle moment. My time in Brazil affirmed God's greatness and reminded me of humanity's goodness. Even though the language barrier was challenging and I didn't have a travel partner to help me, I found God, Spirit, the universe, in the good-hearted people along my path who were genuinely concerned about my well-being. So many were willing to help. The boy and his family, the excursion representative who scheduled my activities at each port, and the traffic control worker who searched for my ride in the crowded streets of Rio de Janeiro. Obrigada is one Portuguese word I learned on my trip that simply means thank you. To all the strangers who helped me along this journey, I say obrigada. Tawanda Lawrence is the senior director of teaching and learning at a school district near Chicago, Illinois. She's the author of Allowing God to Write Your Love Story, Tools for Women Thriving in Their Singleness. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications. And you're currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast-info/audio/on-demand. We return now to the very end of Rainn Wilson's Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution. And we had started his final section in conclusion, and I think we'll go back to the beginning of this. When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. John Muir. In conclusion, are you kidding me? It's impossible to have some kind of conclusion to this Soul Boom thingamajig. There's no conceivable way to wrap up with a tidy little summary the topics we've been tossing about, mulling over, and digging around in for almost 254 pages. I mean, give me a break. As proof of this, I offer a brief recap. We dove into God and 70s TV shows. Together, we tackled the entirety of religion and even tried to build a new, amazing one along the way. We explored all things profound. Consciousness, the sacred and the profane, the existential need for poetry. We dug into the spiritual phenomenon of death and what aliens might be saying about our civilization. And to top it all off, we examined global pandemics, diagnosed most everything that is broken about contemporary society, and laid out seven foundational concepts for a spiritual revolution. There is simply no way on the notorious G.O.D.'s green earth that I will be able to sum up the epic, rambling, sometimes profound, and sometimes ridiculous conversation we've been engaged in. But fine, I'll try. In 1938, Harvard University's medical school began a study that followed a group of 268 men for 80 years. Called the Grant Study, this long-term comprehensive investigation was focused on one question: what makes a good life? In the study, everything was accounted for. Data was gathered on health, psychology, marriage, and children, behavioral choices, resilience in dealing with stress, diet, exercise, and as the subjects got toward the end of their lives, retirement. All of it was sifted through and analyzed to try and determine what allows us to live happy, contented, and fulfilled lives. The data points and insights that were gathered were rumored to have filled rooms. There were many aha takeaways. But at the end of the day, the principal researcher, psychiatrist Dr. George Vaillant, summed up all the findings with a single sentence: the only thing that really matters in life are your relationships to other people. I find that summation incredibly powerful. Only connect, E.M. Forster once wrote, live in fragments no longer. Relationship, connection, these words that hold such transformative power, along with several others, which oddly all begin with C, and that we've been pondering on our journey, such as community, cooperation, consultation, and compassion, bring me to my long-promised analogy, a metaphor far more apt and relatable than the stupid car one from the last chapter. Here it is, the human body. The human body is one of the most profound and intricate entities that we'll ever encounter, a far more complex and nuanced mechanism than a car. It is also a perfect example of a crucial spiritual concept, one we alluded to briefly in crafting Soul Boom, the religion: unity in diversity. A body simply could not be any more diverse. A slushy bag of skin that contains within it goopy liquids, gigantic bones, and tiny organs that determine all kinds of things. A pump and a bellows right smack in the middle of the chest. A cauliflower brain sparked with electrochemical impulses. Eyelashes. Nerve endings. Toenails. All of these components could not be more various and distinctive from one another. And at the same time, they are harmoniously linked and operating, most of the time, hopefully, with incredible grace and fluidity. The body propels itself, meandering around a shopping mall or a park or a dining room, and meanwhile holds somewhere inside of it that miraculous flame of consciousness. One could compare individuals to cells in the body. Independent, yes, but in service to their particular group. Pancreatic cells help a pancreas do whatever it does. Brain cells work together to help the brain do brain stuff. All 37 trillion cells of the human body show flashes of independence, but at the end of the day, they're all working toward a larger unity, that of a body in space, moving, eating, sleeping, and pondering. The natural systems of planet Earth work along analogous lines: oceans, rivers, mountains, forests, clouds, and the biosphere that inhabits those systems. One could say all of humanity, too, is like a body. A single organism of 8 billion cells, individuals, grouped into a myriad of divergent parts, components, and bits and bobs that must harmoniously balance to function as a civilization, interdependent subsystems maintaining their wholeness while laboring toward an even greater wholeness. Just as the health of the body depends on the various component parts all working together in balance, both our planet and our human society need an essential harmony to function with efficiency and grace. Ultimately, I believe this entire crazy Soul Boom dissertation boils down to a single concept: unity. What we must seek in this spiritual revolution is a profound unity unlike anything humanity has ever experienced before. The greatest illusion in this world is the illusion of separation, Albert Einstein. About 10,000 years ago, the current mythology of humans on planet Earth began to play out. Nomadic groups, village, and cave dwellers began to form civilizations that started separating from one another. We saw only differences between tribes and races. Then came remoteness and epochs of never-ending conflict. At its center, there is the concept of duality. There is a thing and another thing, and they're separate and different. The way the entire world works has been built on this illusion of separation for millennia. Much of humanity, living in this way for eons, has created a dualistic global culture: mind versus body, civilization versus nature, spiritual versus material, us versus them, apart. The result? Tribalism and the inherent separateness that comes with it. In spiritual discourse, this tendency to separate is often defined as being fueled by ego, which Buddhists call the enemy of compassion. In religious thought, ego is the persistent self that is stubbornly seeking to win out, to assert and prove itself, to protect its insecurities. In the human body, a single out-of-whack cell can lead to disease. Similarly, our cultural obsession with individualism, our ego-centered lives, is a factor in creating the imbalanced cells, systems, and pandemics that plague our collective well-being. In recent years, we've noticed a shift. As we've matured as a species and our technology has advanced, this myth of separateness has begun to transform. The world has become profoundly smaller with the advent of the modern age of cultural globalization, the telegraph, the steamship, the railroad, the airplane, the car, and eventually the internet. Although, as a species, we're still continuously wrestling with that old tribal separateness and collective ego, we're awakening to the truth of just how interdependent we are. This interconnectedness became blindingly apparent when a virus that started in rural China swept through the world, affecting every country. Or when the tiny nation of Greece defaulted on its loans and upended stock markets globally. Or when supply chains seized up and car parts stuck on cargo ships affected automobile prices everywhere. Also, remember when it seemed like everyone on planet Earth was watching Squid Game over the course of the exact same week? This, along with the blue marble photo phenomenon, has led over the last 50 years to an understanding of what many would term planetary consciousness. We are all related. We need each other, depend on each other, affect each other. Tribalism must move toward community, a global community. Rugged individualism inevitably and necessarily inches toward vulnerable collectivism. We are one human family, regardless of race or nation or class, sharing a rock in space. As the Lakota say, all my relations. This realization / awakening is a crucial step along the path toward the inevitable maturation of our species. But wait, it isn't enough. There's another phase of evolution to go. There's a whole new story to tell. One of my all-time favorite childhood jokes is about a Buddhist ordering a hot dog. He says to the vendor, "Make me one with everything." In this case, a silly joke articulates something better than even Einstein could. If you continue with this evolutionary line of consciousness that I'm describing, you come to the inevitable conclusion that we are not only interconnected, but that in actuality, we are one. Any perception of isolation and disconnection is a mere illusion, as Einstein describes. We become like the Buddhist ordering the hot dog. Limits, boundaries, and differences fall away and evaporate. Picture yourself walking on a beach, watching the waves. You notice each wave crash to shore and dissolve into foam. You see new waves form and ride forward toward the sand. You observe the distinct curve and beauty of each individual crest and fall. Then something subtly shifts in your outlook. You notice that what you're actually taking in is the ocean itself. Your entire perspective slides and expands as you begin to consider the totality of the ocean, its depth and breadth, mysteries, currents, and storms, its awesome beauty and its life-providing bounty, the fish that swim in it, the moisture that rises from it to form the clouds above you. You realize that you yourself are like a single wave on a much larger sea. And like a wave on the ocean, you are one small part of a much grander, more mysterious, powerful, and beautiful totality. Your souls are as waves on the sea of the spirit. Although each individual is a distinct wave, the ocean is one. All are united in God. We must not consider the separate waves alone, but the entire sea. We should rise from the individual to the whole. Abdu'l-Bahá. As we rise from the individual to the whole, our fate can ultimately be a hopeful one. We are like Kwa Chang Kane, like Basho, the poet, wandering the earth, searching for the sacred, for meaning. spiritual hope punks on a journey to build a community at the grassroots. As we suffer difficult tests, we draw upon that deep reservoir of wisdom from the world's great faith traditions. We know that the undefinable creative force that courses through every star and every cell is there to guide us. To quote the narrator of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. This is the transformation that humanity is inevitably moving toward, a profound understanding that we are all linked, more than linked. In fact, we were never separated in the first place. We are interconnected like cells in a single body, alive only in relation to one another, bound together, as the poet Rumi describes, with the most powerful force in the universe. Love is the whole thing. We are only pieces. And so we come to the end of Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution. There are some other books by Rainn Wilson that I will check into for us for the future. Soul Pancake, Chew on Life's Big Questions. The Bassoon King, My Life in Art, Faith, and Idiocy. But for now, we will begin a new book by Mike Dooley in conversation with six renowned channels, The Great Awakening, Our Prophesied Transformation, and the Attainment of Embodied Enlightenment. Whatever precious jewel there is in the heavenly worlds, there is nothing comparable to one who is awakened. Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha. A word on channeling. 40 years ago, my mother told me she discovered some fascinating books by Jane Roberts. The author claimed to enter a trance state from which she would channel a discarnate energy named Seth. During these sessions, her husband transcribed every word on the fly, ready for their publisher. I was genuinely concerned, telling her, "I think you're losing it." She snapped back, "Forget the source. Just read what Seth has to say, then judge." I did as I was told, and so began the greatest journey of my life, inward. In case you're as unfamiliar as I once was, channeling is the ability to intentionally alter your conscious focus to allow the spiritual energy of another from this density, dimension, world, plane, or others to physically communicate through you, usually through writing or spoken word. There are many famous artistic and literary works whose creators claim to have channeled them, including Michelangelo, who said he could see the Pietà within the cold marble slab before taking up his chisel. Mozart, who heard the music he would later compose, today's Abraham books written by Esther Hicks, Jonathan Living Seagull written by Richard Bach, and many others. Similarly, there are athletes who get into a zone to achieve peak performance. Interestingly, many holy books, including the Bible, are accepted by their followers to be the word of God or angels channeled by those whose names appear within each passage of Scripture. It's believed by some that we're all channels of our own inner essence or spirit through the physical instrument of our bodies. To think otherwise is to believe biological matter alone gives rise to our words, thoughts, personalities, and consciousness. And did you catch my emphasis on world two paragraphs ago? Here I ask for your indulgence. In case it's not obvious, I do mean extraterrestrials, ETs. Isn't thinking we're alone in a universe of 1,000 trillion stars, not even counting planets, naive? So, what to make of ETs? As Frank once shared with me, channeled by Tracy Farquhar, my co-author of Channeled Messages from Deep Space, while we are unimaginably different than you, our spiritual and conscious evolution is nearly identical. There is only God, pure source energy, permeating the physical universe. Therefore, all beings from all worlds are truly your spiritual brothers and sisters, no matter their appearance or behavior. In the chapters ahead, you will hear from several of these brothers and sisters. Yeah, channeling has been around forever. It's prudent to caution, however, that just because information might be channeled doesn't necessarily mean it's true, relevant, or helpful. There are probably as many, if not more, lost souls beyond the veils of time and space looking for a mouthpiece as there are confused humans now walking the earth. For myself, I discern whether something is worth embracing as truth with this little litmus test. Does the information, one, speak of life's beauty, or two, speak of our power, and three, is it non-exclusionary, leaving no one behind? If you've read this far, I urge you to keep reading. Forget the source, if that helps. Just read what the channels have to say. Then judge if the material is worthy of your consideration, or even if it might transform your very life. Forward. It's a perfect illusion and challenge. It's a perfect illusion and challenge to be thrust into a space that you call reality with such a profound level of forgetting in favor of the possibility of creating, with free will, a new light to shine into eternity, a new version of everything you, because you are everything. Welcome to the miracle of being human. You are storytellers, but you've been telling yourselves the same stories over and over again. You don't read between the lines. You're literal, literally literal. You hear words and forget that they're vibrations floating through the space of nothingness. And you read, forgetting that you're simply seeing marks on paper, some of which absorb the light and some of which do not. You are not able, as we are, to hear or read past the words themselves and get the full transmission of the storyteller or author. It is a limit, but one you can overcome. When you hear and see, listen and look for the energy between the words and the layers upon them. And be sure to also read with your heart as much as you do with your mind and your eyes so that you will truly understand. You may ask then, what is there to do? There is nothing you must do. Creation loves the fool and the wise man, and often they are one and the same. Creation loves the sinner and the saint, for they too are the same. There can be no one and no thing that is not, in its full being, everything else at the same time. There is no right and wrong. There is only isness. You cannot fail at being the one who is needed to complete the story of infinity. Without you, exactly as you now are, the universe would not exist. So why this communication and the push toward waking those who sleep? Because too many are ready. You are ready. Ready to let go of suffering, ready to become pure freedom, ready to remember who you are. The game you have come here to play is to realize that you are the creator. Our choice to speak, like those within this book, is in part because of your request to receive these messages and to read them. It's necessary in creation for all requests to be fulfilled. It's also our pleasure to speak with you in this way, for we see you as us, and to interact with another portion of ourselves is entirely satisfying. If some of the information that you have called through us helps accelerate your journey and place you in a position of feeling more well most of the time, then this, too, is our pleasure. You will eventually come to find, however, that the information we share with you is nothing more than stopping someone who is frantically looking for their glasses and telling them they're already on your face. We also hold a great level of curiosity for your mystery. We envy the possibility to not know as much as we do. From this not knowing can stem true creation as you assemble all the components and weave the threads together in a way that is most pleasing to you. In our existence, this is no longer possible as we see all the configurations simultaneously. The arts, the way you weave words, and the stories you wrap around relationships and interactions are far more creative than we are capable of. To you, they are new. This is why so many come to be with you. Although we see each of you as us, and we see all your infinite possibilities, you yourselves choose in each moment which of those possibilities to apply. For us, these choices offer a moment of surprise in an existence, their own, that has made surprise unfamiliar. We thank you as you are the best show on TV, so to speak, for we do not know the ending. We do not know what you'll do next. Vay Green, channeled by J.P. Jesse Herman. And that is V-A-G-R-E-I-N. Introduction. I've always been intrigued by the stories of so-called ascended masters who've graced the face of the earth, inspired by their miracles, wisdom, love, and the wild implications that what they've done, we can do, and greater. Jesus said as much. Whether naive, hopeful, or both, I've always believed these tales to be true, and by this stage of my life, for reasons I'm about to share, I fully expect that one day soon others will attain a similar mastery over the elements, undoubtedly the wisest or most loving among us. I now even dare wonder, maybe even me? But where to begin? How to start? Such musings were incomprehensible when I was a younger adult, especially since I knew of no creditable modern stories of any such masters among us. Instead, I dove deep into my fascination with metaphysics to live deliberately and create consciously using creative visualization and learning of its supporting principles. And I've had a pretty stellar 4 decades at it. First, by practicing what I learned to thrive in my own life, and second, by writing 17 books of my discoveries and hosting 4 world tours, teaching it to others. Though not without some setbacks and heartbreak, I was so fulfilled for so long that I began wondering with some concern, is this it? I mean, how many times does one travel to Tahiti in their life? And how many millions of dollars do we raise for our favorite charities? The old answers of more, better, faster weren't hitting it for me anymore. So on December 16th, 2018, sitting on a veranda overlooking the Bay of Manzanillo in Mexico, alone at home, I started making notes on my laptop. I began an online journal titled Enlightenment, and in it I entered about a half dozen of my favorite passages on the topic of spiritual illumination from a few of my favorite books, like Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, and Jonathan Livingston Seagull, both by Richard Bach, Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, and Ramtha, The White Book by J.Z. Knight. This collection and my own related notes were to remind me that there could be much more to my life if I'd simply give these ideas more of my attention by returning to reread them from time to time. In January, however, I was back on the wheel of Maya, entangled in the illusions, travel, and concerns of my life until the following December. Back on that same veranda, I was slowly and finally making my way through Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, overcome with bouts of euphoria as the weeks rolled by, stunned to be reading actual tales of yogis and their superhuman achievements chronicled by the author's life in this highly celebrated and much respected international phenomenon. And as if the rekindled excitement for my own hoped-for self-realization, another expression for enlightenment, wasn't already maxed out, I had a life-changing call with a woman named Sarah Landon, serendipitously on December 16, 2019. She was a new acquaintance and channel of the council who told me during our scheduled session, without any earlier discussion of my interest in enlightenment, you are undergoing an incredible shift into fully realizing yourself as the absolute master that you are. Every single one of you came here to be part of this great transformation of consciousness. You came to wake up, to come into the realization of the embodied masters that you are. We come now to the end of our program. As always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher program.